Hour three, triple option, RBKD. We got the All-American Rod Babers. We got Brad Kellner. I'm Kevin Dunn. We are two in, two to go. Beautiful day here in Austin. And get the Horn app. That way you can enjoy that day, still enjoy the show. Plenty to come. HornFM.com for everything you're looking for, including for all you Cowboys fans. $100 gift card courtesy of Miller Lite to the Cowboys gift store. And all you got to do is get to HornFM.com. Also, some Texas stuff on there. We'll continue to talk Texas Longhorn football as, whew, Longhorn Nation, we almost lost it, guys. We are, we're just an irritable bunch right now, and things add up. And last night, everyone, I mean, when we left the show, if I would have polled the majority of Texas fans, and not just on Twitter, they would have been pretty happy and optimistic and drinking some part of the Kool-Aid for Steve Sarkisian, and especially ones that know college football, that look at Kwiatkowski and know what Jeff Banks and what some of these hires look pretty good on the surface, and that, hey, this thing's moving in the right direction. Rod, it was that quickly that all of a sudden Mike Stoops gets rumored or reported that he's going to be the next linebacker coach at Texas, and Twitter blew up. There's a lot of things we can talk about this in terms of whether it would have been that big a deal or not. I thought BK made some good points in the opening hour saying it wouldn't have been the end of the world, but it does seem like it maybe Sark or Texas, CDC, big money donors, whoever it is, maybe did kind of a little bit of a test run, because Mike Stoops is not going to be the next linebacker coach, and Steve Sarkisian said that today, but last night it was reported that he was. Could be a wrong report, or it could be them saying, you know what, we don't want to piss off the fan base too much.
Yeah, I mean, we don't know right now. I think I'm kind of going to jump on the grassy knoll. I'm leaning toward believing the conspiracy theory. If Mike Stoops ends up at Texas as an analyst, as a defensive analyst of some kind, then I am probably going to jump out in the grassy knoll, and that's going to lead me to believe that, yes, he was indeed a candidate and probably the lead candidate to be the linebackers coach, but the tail started wagging the dog, right? Cyberbullying is bad and it's wrong, but in this case, it might have saved Coach Sark from doing something that would have at least alienated a lot of the fan base, would have turned against him as a result of that. And also, there was a report, and we thought it was fake news, and I believe we all kind of scoffed at it and moved on. That was a report out there, and I don't remember who it was from, that Mike Stoops was also a candidate for the DC job at the time it was open. And we just assumed, somebody's trolling us. Probably some Aggie put that out there so we can see us lose our minds on social media like we actually did. But I didn't think that was substantive. Now, like I said, if he ends up here as an analyst, it would just show me that, yes, indeed, that basically Sark is a Stoops fan. Sark, not Stoops family, but Mike Stoops specifically, that he likes Mike Stoops, that he thinks Mike Stoops would have done a good job here. And I'm not saying he wouldn't have done a good job, but the question is, since it's such an unpopular pick for your fan base, is it possible you could have gotten another linebackers coach from anywhere that could have done as good a job as Mike Stoops or better? And the answer to that question is resounding yes, of course you could have gotten an upgrade over Mike Stoops. We all know what Mike Stoops is at this time, and it seems as if the game has passed Mike Stoops by. Does that mean he wouldn't have been a good position coach? No, he could have been a great position coach. We don't know that. But I believe it was not really worth, in my opinion, if you're Sark, it's not really worth you losing, I don't know, 15-20% of your fan base before you even played a game just because you really wanted to have Mike Stoops on your staff. He doesn't bring that much to the table. Yeah. You can go get somebody else that can bring what he brings to the table. So I agree with BK. It could have worked, no question about it. I'm not saying it wouldn't have worked, but it was such an unpopular pick, and not because he's a Stoops. I don't think Longhorn fans are that against Stoops. It's just not the right Stoops.
Right.
And I don't think because it's a Sooner guy, because when Dennis Simmons was rumored to be a top candidate for the wide receiver coaching job, and he's from Oklahoma, everybody was really excited about it because he's got a great resume, and recently he's a name that's been trending in the right direction. So it wasn't about him being a Sooner, wasn't about him being a Stoops, it was about Mike Stoops, and lately Mike Stoops, he's been trending in the wrong direction. A lot of reports about him being a negative influence in that locker room last he was with Oklahoma.
Yeah, if you told me Bob Stoops was interested in getting back into coaching and wanted to coach a linebackers at Texas, then I would say, oh, yeah, absolutely, sign me up.
Analyst, like I said.
Analyst
take that.
Role,
yeah.
Whatever.
I would vet him.
We're talking about a Hall of Famer. Yeah, make sure he's not like giving some insider information back to Lincoln Riley at Oklahoma. I don't think Bob Stoops would ever take this job. No. I don't know if he's going to take any job anywhere outside of the XFL, of course.
Yeah.
Former head coach of the Dallas Renegades. But it's just, and to your point, Rod, it's just an unnecessary risk for Steve Sarkisian to take, right? Because, I mean, this fan base is clearly super against Mike Stoops, and the linebacker play would have had to have been perfect next season.
Yeah.
Like, if it wasn't, if there's one bad play, God, they could make every tackle except for one in the season opener against Louisiana, and everyone's going to be like, oh, you hired Mike Stoops? Really? We tried to tell you that was the wrong guy to hire. You hired this guy? What are you doing? Like, there's just no need to take that risk and turn half the fan base and turn some of the administration and turn some of the big money donors against you. I mean, we talked about it. Hell, we spent the last few months talking about it with Tom Herman. That's a huge reason why things didn't work for Tom Herman, is because he didn't have any friends, right? He pissed everybody off, and he didn't do a good enough job building relationships that he should have built. Steve Sarkisian has done a good job of that to this point, but if he goes and hires Mike Stoops, then he's already got people against him, and you just don't want to do that, KD. There's no reason, and like Rod said, there are plenty of other guys you could find out there who could do just the same and probably better than what Mike Stoops could do for you here at Texas.
No, and we've been put in some positions as Texas fans, and all fan bases, it's funny because you can get real, you can throw out a lot of platitudes and get pretty self-righteous with stuff, but then all of a sudden, if it's put in your lap, you go, well, this is a little bit different, right? Like with Casey Horney, right? How about this whole fall, Urban Meyer?
Right.
There are a lot of Texas fans that kind of turned on that. Stoops, there's not as much stuff off the field, although some of the stories I've heard, he's too combustible, and I they had to move him up to the booth because he was losing it too much on the sidelines. Seriously. And then he was losing it in the booth, and people are like, oh, my God, like, you're not going to break. This is glass. Like, don't break this. Like Rod said, he went to the car wash for coaches, the rehab, and maybe that worked for him, maybe it didn't, but there's not enough stuff on the field. So with Horney, whatever he was doing, or Urban Meyer, that one was actually easier because you knew the baggage off and you knew what you were getting on the field. I would only be hoping that we're getting something, Rod, good on the field. And it really looked like the last 10 years the game passed this guy by. He was a textbook example that I would give on this show all the time.
Yeah, and no, that's the funny part about it. You have kind of made him a caricature.
Yes.
Of the kind of the old antiquated coach who is using old concepts and has this old school way of teaching concepts, and even the way he motivates guys, right? You got to move him into the booth because he's too volatile on the sidelines. He's grabbing guys and cussing guys out. And all that is seen as kind of a 20th century approach to football. And now things have gotten much more cerebral. Unless you're Dan Campbell, of course. But anyway, I digress. But still, yeah, so I agree with that. It's, to me, you know, in BK's right, it could have worked. I mean, he's a linebacker's coach, and usually when you get a guy that's an ex-head coach who's going to teach you a position and just being an assistant, you would think, oh, that's an immediate upgrade. Love having that type of experience on the coaching staff. But in this case, because of the blowback, because of the crossfire hurricane that came about on Twitter and social media, when that name was dropped, and we talked about, guys, that was less than – I think when the name first dropped, you said it was last night, right, KD?
Yeah.
You're talking about less than 12 hours before Longhorn Twitter was ablaze with basically Sark doesn't know what the hell he's doing. I'm done already. I can't believe he would make this kind of move. Yes, people were overreacting, but with that type of overreaction, I think it was a pretty safe bet that, like you said, even if it was just a wrong report, we don't know. But if they were down the path of hiring him, that they would renege on that deal and go, okay, guys, let's rethink this. There was no reason for the fans to get this up in arms about an assistant coach hire unless it's something, it's almost sentimental and it was almost personal for Texas fans. So, yeah, man, it'd be different if it was a coordinator hire and you had to have him because he had a system or a concept that was integral and pivotal in your success. It's not. It's just Mike Stoops. He's not even the best of the Stoops. He's like third or fourth down the line. He's
dude,
third.
I take the father over him, right?
Yeah. I mean,
Bob is clearly number one. Mark has done great at Kentucky, considering it's Kentucky football. Yeah. And then Papa Stoops has to be up there. Hell, Mama Stoops, I don't know if she coached anything, but I think I'd rather have her than Mike Stoops, too. So,
dude, I'll take Drake Stoops right now, man. The receiver. You mean the Drake Stoops?
Do they have a dog?
I'll take that Stoops,
they have a dog
man.
Or a
Come
cat?
On.
Like, I'll take any family pets, too. You know, just give me anyone but Mike.
I'll take Drake.
And to your point, yeah, that's fantastic right there.
I'd take him in the portal. We'll take him as an eighth receiver more than
right?
Mike.
Come on.
Guys, it was less than 10 hours in between the initial report from Matt Zenitz, who covers Alabama football for Alabama.com or Al.com. That was at 10:22 last night, and then it was 8:08 this morning where Brian Davis of the Statesman tweeted out that he had talked to Sark, and Sark told him that,
nope,
Stoops isn't coming here.
Nope.
It's not happening. We've got somebody else in mind that we're really, really excited about. So that's how quickly it was. And, you know, it's funny, like, this is a passionate fan base, guys.
Yeah.
We know that. Obviously, the three of us are incredibly passionate. And if you're listening to us, you're really, really passionate, too. But there were a lot of people across the country, and hell, even Longhorn fans themselves, who were talking about apathy. And, you know, we've been apathetic the last few years because the results have slipped, and I just don't find myself caring for this team or about this team as much as I did in the past. There was no apathy last night. This is still an incredibly passionate and hungry fan base to find a winner. And, hell, they're willing to bring out the social media mob if it helps make this football team better.
Yeah, I don't like bullying tactics. I don't like the social media mob. And even if it's something that I agree with, then even then I always kind of look back and I go, wait a minute, should societies function like this? And what happens if this thing turns another way?
The downfall of society.
Thank you, Charlie. You gave us some good stuff. But I think my biggest question is, as we move forward, how much of this was Sark listening to that? Because Rod hit the nail on the head. You don't want the tail to wag the dog, and you certainly don't want it to do it too much, because sometimes that's a fun little game they play. I'm just worried about – so I felt like three things last night. And three things that led to everything. So everyone was upset and not happy with it. Almost everyone. Some people, CJ Vogel, our boy, had a good rational take like you. He's like, this isn't the end of the world. I hate to throw that take out there, but we're going to be okay if they do hire him. But a majority of Texas fans were on level 9 or 10, but I felt like there were three separate things that, for us, I mean, hadn't been a very good coach, so that's where it goes with me. Some Texas fans, he just is that Stoops, and the Longhorns down, and all the pain during that early 2000s run. But then also I saw MAGA hat getting thrown out there a lot. And that's just kind of weird. If you've got all those different things that are in the cocktail for future hires, I want to make sure Sark is running this thing the way he wants to run it. Rod, you can't let Texas fans determine, you know, what you're going to do too much. That's more long term in an overview. Short sample size, I agree with what you said to start the show off with, is that in this case, don't piss off the fan base. And the main thing is meritocracy. He hadn't been a very good coach.
Yep. Not worth it. Not worth it. Not worth the risk of losing, you know, even if it's 10% of your fans this early on. You haven't played a game yet. You got a lot of goodwill right now. All right. He's gonna spend that goodwill at one point. He's gonna spend it at one point, whether it be about losing games or making decisions fans don't like. How he handles the eyes of Texas, it's okay. All right, because he's not perfect. He's gonna make mistakes. He's gonna do things that you may not. And he might make the right decision and you may not like it. He just gotta make the right decision and do what he believes is best for the program. But in the end, I think, you know, before you even play your first game, right now he's doing a lot of things that are seen as political, right? He's going to see the Texas high school football coaches, and he's talking to the Letterman, and he's talking to the boosters and the donors and the parents, and the Zoom calls, and all those things are great, establishing those authentic relationships. I believe that he would, you know, spoil some of that goodwill before you even play your first game if he would have made that hire. Now, it's worth it if that hire is one that is going to give you an advantage and put you over the top.
Mm-hmm.
Is Mike Stoops that hire?
Right.
Nope. We all know it ain't. And he knows it ain't either. That's why he decided to renege on that deal.
Yeah.
Yeah, this wouldn't kindle brows at Florida State. where it's
exactly,
like, you know what,
there
it's worth it. It's worth it.
Dude, even if the Stoops hire was the hire to put Texas over the top, I still feel like there'd be Texas fans who'd be pissed about it. I got to lay, even if Texas won the national title within 2 years, people would be mad that Stoops is getting a ring and they felt like he didn't deserve it and, oh, the linebacker play wasn't good enough. Like, as ridiculous as that may sound, it just feels like there is that much of a hatred towards that guy.
Yeah.
And it's pretty founded, but, like, taking it to that level, I think, is a little bit unfounded. But, yeah, the social media mob. I mean, I brought up the Art Briles example earlier, right? He was taking an offensive coordinator job in the CFL, and then the social media up there and, hell, around this country, too, just went nuts, and he ended up basically getting fired before he was even hired. I kind of like that conspiracy, Rod, and KD, you've talked about it too. It's like it feels like this thing was going to happen if Texas fans didn't do what Texas fans did.
I think it was going to happen, and I don't know about the DC part, but Rod's right about that. There was enough stuff there that I'm sure they were maybe looking at him, but I think this thing was moving down at least that direction, and it got stopped pretty quickly. You know, I don't own any political paraphernalia or hats or shirts or anything like that, so I really don't care about that stuff. But for me, just moving forward, I want to make sure Sark can make his decisions not based on stuff like that, because I saw that a lot on my Twitter feed, and maybe that's just who I'm following. That was their biggest issue with hiring him, and I thought, hey, I don't want to hire him, but I don't care about that. Like, that's not how we're going to run this football program, right?
You think?
And more gets back to the bigger picture of, I don't even care about that, but Rod talking about the tail wagging the dog. I don't want Sark to have to listen to three or four different, you know, things that may come into hiring, and it's like, oh, that's going to matter?
Interesting thought. Yeah. Like, what if Mike Gundy wanted to be the quarterback's coach here? Think people would bring up the OAN stuff as a reason to not bring him in, even though he's like super duper overqualified?
They may. And look, there are some really smart people that I thought made some good points on Twitter too that said, hey, with the whole Isaac Texas thing, is this the right? I mean, look, I mean, I understand what they're saying, but I'm more worried about Sark having to deal with so many different BBs that have so many different qualifications for what works at UT.
Just unnecessary stuff added to his plate.
Stuff that just doesn't necessarily, it shouldn't be part of the qualifications.
Interesting. Yeah, I like that logic right there. And look, I think Sark helped himself by not bringing in Mike Stoops. And yeah, the reasoning behind it, what some fans had behind it might not be that rational or that fair, but it's probably for the best. I think that Mike Stoops is not going to end up here in Austin. But it was a crazy 10 hours for sure. I thought Twitter was going to shut down here. In Austin, Texas, USA, America. All right, Rod B., your rant of the day today, sir. What you got on a Friday?
All right, I want to talk about the AFC-NFC title games. Of course, the big headlines and the big storylines are about the quarterback duels that are going to be going on and those quarterback matchups. I'll give you a specific thing that I am excited about. It was one little specific element to this matchup, at least on the AFC side that nobody's talking about. And there's another specific element to the matchup on the NFC side that I'm really intrigued by. Haven't heard anybody talk about it, but it's one of the things that I think is going to be really, really unique in this matchup between these quarterbacks. So we'll get into that on the other side. Talk some AFC NFC title game, a little football theory thrown in there as well, and a shout out to an all-time great football mind who is no longer with us. All that and more on Rod's Rant of the Day right here on the Triple Option with RBKD right here on 104.9, 101.9 and AM 1260.
I'm as mad as hell and I'm not gonna take this anymore.
Find out what happens when people stop being polite
and start getting real.
You ain't keeping it real.
My God, okay, it's happening. Everybody stay calm.
Oh, you've done it now. It's time for Rod's Rant of the Day.
Hold on to your butt.
Welcome back to the Triple Option with RBKD. Time for Rod's Rant of the Day, and I want to talk about the quarterback matchups in the NFC and AFC title games. First, I guess we'll start here, and then we'll work our way kind of through the Lambeth and get to from the micro to the macro. Ted Thompson, longtime personnel man, GM, former GM for the Packers, passed away earlier this week. He was the GM, officially the GM from 05 to 2017, but even before that, he was with the Packers organization as the assistant director of pro personnel, director of player personnel from 92 to 99. He's with the organization for a long time. And one of the things that he and Ron Wolf, because Ron Wolf was originally the GM there in the 90s when he was then. Ron Wolf is, I believe, a Hall of Fame GM. Ron Wolf always said that if he could, if they would allow him, he'd draft a quarterback in every draft. he was that obsessed with drafting quarterbacks. And he passed this philosophy on to Ted Thompson, and Ted Thompson was really all about drafting quarterbacks too. And it's one of the things that his really that blueprint is one that has really had a domino effect all throughout the NFL, because the Packers had so much success with that model, because him and Ted Thompson believe, and I have adopted this belief as well, that the quarterback position is always essentially an asset in a commodities market. Like the NFL, basically all your positions are going to deteriorate over time, right? That's just father time. They only have their prime for a certain period of time. And when you're talking about a quarterback, at least with the quarterback position, you have more time to get return on that investment. And there are more ways to diversify the quarterback investment than any other position, if you're just looking at it as a commodities market. And that's how Ron Wolf and Ted Thompson looked at the quarterback position. I can flip it like a house. I can flip that quarterback, trade him to somebody else, and get my pick back or get more picks for him. And by the way, the Patriots have also adopted this philosophy. Or I could have that quarterback be that's my project quarterback, right? That's my developmental quarterback, my quarterback of the future, maybe. We'll just see what he has. Maybe it's my insurance policy, right? Everything valuable in our life, when you take out insurance on it, your life, your health, your car, your house, why not the quarterback position? So sometimes that backup quarterback position, it's just insurance policy. It could be a number of different things. And the Packers believe this, and it helped their organization stay on top for a really long time, because it increased the longevity of their championship window. And you go look at the quarterbacks in the time that Ted Thompson was there, even when Ron Wolf was the GM, just the time that he was in the front office, it totaled 25 years combined as a GM and as a front office guy. They drafted 14 quarterbacks in that time span.
Wow.
14 quarterbacks Wolf and Ted Thompson.
How many years? 14 and how many years? Rod?
25.
That's
14
crazy.
In those 25 years. Yes, unbelievable, man. Whether you're talking about Ty Detmer, Mark Brunell, Jay Barker, Kyle Wacholtz, I'm sure I messed that up, Ron Makata, Matt Hasselbeck, he drafted Aaron Brooks, remember him?
Yeah, oh. Virginia.
And then he comes in, they draft Aaron Rodgers and Ingo Martin and Matt Flynn and Brian Brum and B.J. Coleman and Brett Hundley and Jordan Love most recently. And by the way, Ted Thompson was advisor to the front office from 2018 to 2021. So he was still advising them. And trust me, nobody had more clout around that front office than Ted Thompson walking around there. And I'm sure when they drafted Jordan Love, that time Ted Thompson was either asked about it or advised them on that move. And everybody thought it was a controversial move. You guys know I praised the move because I praised the Packers. That's what they do. They've always done that. This is not really out of character for them. And you go look at it, hell, with the Aaron Rodgers move, and this is why I'll kind of jump to Ted Thompson maybe being responsible for this Aaron Rodgers reinvention. Because one thing that happened when they drafted Aaron Rodgers in 2005, and by the way, that was just a brilliant move by them. He dropped in the draft. We still don't really know why Aaron Rodgers dropped so far, do we? Do we remember why he dropped so far in the draft?
The 20s? So a little bit of when he went from the JC to Jeff Tedford and Cal, Jeff Tedford, and I heard Rodgers talking about this actually a couple weeks ago, reminded me. He had he was wanted the ball near his ear. So actually his motion looked a little bit weird, and that was actually from Tedford. So Rodgers enjoyed actually going back to his normal motion. That is the reason why. He went 23 of 24 against USC in 2004. I was screaming that he should be a top 10 pick, and he wasn't.
Man, yeah, wow, I heard it was because they knew he didn't like his brother or his parents very much, and they didn't think that'd be a good cultural fit, and he wouldn't be as aligned with the rest of the locker rooms as they wanted.
I didn't know Easterby was drafting back then. But one thing that happened, though, and I think it was a byproduct, but maybe it was intentional, and then they just saw it work with Aaron Rodgers. I truly believe there are some athletes out there. You know, you learn this as a coach. You got to motivate and teach differently. And I always talk about the competitive sickness and the greats, the goats, if you will. They have that competitive sickness. We talked about the late, great Hank Aaron, right? He's got that competitive sickness. We saw with MJ in The Last Dance, that competitive. And we know that Tom Brady's got it, right? That competitive sickness. It consumes every fiber of their being. And it's hard to become a goat without that competitive sickness. And when you find it in a player, when you identify it in an athlete, you need to feed it and fuel it. And I believe when Aaron Rodgers was drafted, it fed and fueled Brett Favre's competitive sickness, right? Because remember, that was the end of Brett Favre. Brett Favre had two horrible years prior to him being traded in 08. And if you look at it in 05 and 0, I guess 05 and 06, dude, he has pedestrian years. He looks like Father Time has gotten the best of Brett Favre. They draft Aaron Rodgers because they're looking toward the future. Smart move by the organization. And Brett freaking Favre, upset about the disrespect and a mounting chip now on his shoulder because Aaron Rodgers is literally and figuratively in that quarterback this room breathing down his neck. He has one of his best seasons in 07. He has his best completion percentage as a Packer. He had his highest yards per attempt as a Packer in 07. This is 2 years after they were drafted. They drafted Rodgers in 05. So in 07, we saw this transformation by Brett Favre. He had the most game-winning drives that he had ever had as a Packer. He had the most wins he had ever had as a Packer. He really had this resurgence. And what it made me realize is that, you know, some guys, they do need that. They do need their competitive sickness to be reset. I think if after all those years of becoming an all-time great, and he was basically a walking, talking Hall of Famer by the end of his career, I think Brett Favre got what Nick Saban calls the success flu. I think he got complacent. I think it did get to the point where he was comfortable. And what did that Aaron Rodgers pick do for him? It made him uncomfortable.
No question.
Constantly. It made him comfortable in the position room. It made him constantly. And sometimes that's what a great player needs. They need to be uncomfortable to bring out the best version of themselves. And here's something else, and I'll point it out because I think that it happened to Aaron Rodgers. I think literally history repeated itself, and I believe that Ted Thompson told them, you know what, draft Jordan Love. Draft not only for the future because we need to know what the hell we're going to do, and this is kind of the Packer way. We draft quarterbacks, but draft them. If you want to move up and trade up and draft them, draft that guy. And watch how Aaron Rodgers responds. Keep in mind, guys, the last 2 years prior to them drafting Jordan Love, Aaron Rodgers is leading the NFL in throwaways. He's throwing away plays. The guy that can make any throw on a football field, extend plays, and can, in his artistic way, improvise on a football field unlike anything we've ever seen, was just throwing away, giving up on plays. He was done. He admitted he would oftentimes act like the headset was broke because he hated the play call so much, and he didn't want to execute that play. He was unhappy, guys, and he was – I'm not saying that he was, you know, not competing, no, but his competitive sickness was starting to shrivel.
Yeah.
It was shrinking. That was shrinkage going on. And then what happened when they drafted Jordan Love, dude, that beast was reawakened within him, that competitive sickness. The same competitive sickness, by the way, that had him wanting to prove everybody in Packerland that he could be better than Brett Favre. Remember, that was the competitive sickness early on. That was the chip on his shoulder. I can be as good as Brett Favre. Hell, I can be better than Brett Favre. And then once he got to that apex and he won two MVPs in the Super Bowl, it was like, yeah. So I need to run the show. And he wasn't collaborating with the coaches, wasn't getting along with coaches and players, wanted to do everything his way, and it led to this toxicity. They drafted Jordan Love, and then the competitive sickness is refueled, and now he's having an MVP year. The truth is, guys, even if Jordan Love never, ever works out, the fact that you got Aaron Rodgers now recommitted and playing at an MVP level, I would say is worth the first-round pick. If I had to give up a first-round pick just to have Aaron Rodgers playing at the MVP level he has now, I think I might do it.
Yeah.
Because that's the only way you was going to win a Super Bowl anyway.
Rod, I some people may hear this and be like, oh, no. I don't think it's even – to say it's a stretch is flat-out wrong. I think it's true. I mean, I really believe there's a lot of what you're saying is true. And how much, we don't know. But we do know, at least from looking at Aaron Rodgers, one, Rod's right. I've never seen anyone throw the ball away with more attitude. If you see that and don't think there's attitude there, you're probably single. because you probably don't pick up on that stuff very well. But I truly believe that he's one of those guys that plays better when he's really pissed off and motivated.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think Rod's theory is outlandish at all.
No.
You know, maybe the question is, well, was it just McCarthy, right? You brought that up, Rod. I mean, it was clear that Aaron Rodgers hated McCarthy at the end, and you know, maybe the LaFleur thing was a part of it too, but I think you're dead on. And in a conversation that we've had, God, my old man has ingrained this into my head. You know, he's a big believer in the contract year thing.
I thought you were going to go with that condom advice.
No,
he was giving you.
No. That's it's better to be lucky than good, which is the worst advice ever in terms of that regard. Just contract year, you guys know it, right? Players will have their best seasons when they're playing for something.
Sean Dunson.
And in the case that you're bringing up, Rod, with like Aaron Rodgers, it's like, well, he's got competition now. There's a guy behind him. So that's like he's playing for something. Otherwise, he's not going to get his money and he's not going to get to keep his job. So I think like that, sort of the comparison I'm making there makes your theory very, very feasible. And hell, I agree 100% with the part of, you know, if drafting Jordan Love made Aaron Rodgers back into this Aaron Rodgers, and hell, this might be the best he's ever played, and that is sure as hell worth a first-round pick. That's worth a couple of first-round picks, honestly.
Yeah, guys, they used to, actually, I call it, I don't know if people call it, but I call it the Seabiscuit syndrome. Seabiscuit is an all-time great racing horse, and Red Pollard, who was the jockey for Seabiscuit, you watch the movie, you'll see this, he would often hold him back because he believed that Seabiscuit wanted to see his competition.
Mm.
That if Seabiscuit didn't see his competition and he was like either too far back or too ahead in the lead, then he wouldn't run as fast as he runs when he can see that competition.
Ah.
That's what brought the best in him. It was feeding his competitive sickness. And even George Wolf, the other jockey that rode Seabiscuit, said the same thing. And I believe I call it Seabiscuit syndrome. Tom Brady's got it. Tom Brady, listen, and I think Belichick identified in Tom Brady, which is why Belichick drafted a quarterback. Hell, how many quarterbacks did Tom Brady have drafted after he was already a Super Bowl winning quarterback? Rohan Davey, Cliff Kingsbury, Matt Castle,
Jimmy.
Kevin O'Connell, Zach Robinson, Ryan Mallett, Jimmy Garoppolo, Jacoby Brissett, Danny Etling, Jarrett Stidham, for God's sakes. And by the way, out of all those quarterbacks, all of them were drafted at a spot higher in the draft than Tom Brady, except for two of them. Danny Etling and Zach Robinson. Cliff Kingsbury was actually drafted higher than Tom Brady, I think. Or right around where Tom Brady was drafted, right around there. So my point is, I think Belichick recognized that. And who knows, Lloyd Carr might have told him that you get the best of Tom Brady when he's competing constantly. He needs somebody breathing down his neck, and if he gets that, then Tom Brady's competitive sickness, that beast, that inner monster that consumes him, then it comes out. So I think for those two quarterbacks, both of them experienced that. And now at the later part of Tom Brady's career, when he was the GOAT, he didn't want to have to do that, prove himself over and over again. But that's what Belichick wanted, and that's what brought out the best in Brady, whether he wanted to believe it or not. I think at the end, it just was untenable for the two. You know, he was never the highest paid quarterback in the league. He was in the top five highest paid quarterbacks in terms of salary cap hit five times out of the 20 years he was there with the Patriots. So they just kept him hungry. If you keep him hungry like a rabid dog, man, you'll get that Tom Brady that almost, you know, like that 2001 Tom Brady is just as competitive and just as hungry as he's always been. All right, AFC, real quick, and this is a storyline that I want to get to about the AFC quarterbacks, and I love this. This may be the matchup of the two strongest arms in the history of the NFL. I'm not, that's not hyperbole. Check this out. Mahomes at the combine topped the record in 2017 for the hardest throw at the combine in throwing speed at 60 miles per hour, tied Logan Thomas, who's now a tight end for Washington, and Brian Bennett, who's now in the CFL. In 2018, Josh Allen broke that combine record and threw it 62 miles per hour. At the Senior Bowl, they said he threw it around 66 miles per hour, actually.
Damn.
In 2018. Yeah, he's a monster. If you looked at air yards, how long the ball travels in the air, longest throw for Josh Allen on record, next-gen stats, 63.9 yards. Mahomes, 60.9 yards. In a 2018 preseason game, though, and those are regular season numbers. In a 2018 preseason game, Mahomes did throw it 68.6 yards in a game to Tyreek Hill.
Are you just teasing BK here? All three of those were close to his favorite number. You had 60.9, 63.9, and then 68.8. eight or nine.
Great point. Mahomes' pro day, they ask you to throw what they call like the Hail Mary drill. They want you to just drop back and chunk it as far as you freaking can. Mahomes' pro day, he threw it 77 yards, they say. He went from basically started at the end, the 27-yard line, and threw it deep into the opposing end zone. And in pregame warm-ups, there are some urban legends out there, urban myths out there about Patrick Mahomes. They say he's thrown it end zone to end zone in pregame, like Steph Curry doing those crazy trick shots.
Yeah.
He's thrown it end zone to end zone. But like I said, I haven't. That's not on video yet. Josh Allen threw it at his pro day, the Hail Mary drill. He threw it around 77 yards too, so he was close between 75 and 80 yards. He threw it at altitude though, and altitude always helps the ball, the lift of the ball. Mahomes, when they asked him what his longest throw is, he claims his longest throw was 83 yards. Josh Allen, when asked what his longest throw of his career was, he said 83 yards. Zach Moss, the running back for Buffalo, said that he believes that Josh Allen can throw it 100 yards. So, gentlemen, what I'm intrigued by that AFC matchup, yes, two young great quarterbacks, but it might be a matchup of the strongest arms in NFL history.
Woo!
Wow, I like that.
I love that.
83 yards.
I know.
That is ridiculous.
So there's video of Mahomes I remember looking at from Texas Tech where he would warm up, and it was like 90.
That's insane, man. I mean, I get excited when I throw it 8 yards. Like, I get pretty
yeah,
excited.
Right.
83 is
did
insane.
Do you see the spiral and the tight RPM?
Yeah, it feels like no Hail Mary is too much of a Hail Mary with either of those guys,
no.
Right? I mean, they just have that sort of arm strength.
Eat it up. You know, I mean, you get in certain times in life when things are either the best they've ever been or not as great as they used to be. We're at an awesome time to watch quarterbacks right now.
Absolutely.
That's true.
Absolutely. Great stuff. Rod's
yeah,
rant
that was,
of the
that
day.
Good.
A little bit of a preview for the AFC and NFC championship games coming up on Sunday. We'll get back into those at the top of the hour. But we've got Off the Record 2 coming up. Bigfoot is real. At least one Oklahoma man thinks so. And he's on a mission to prove it. We'll give you that story next. The triple option with RBKD rolls along on a Friday. Happy Friday to you and yours. Appreciate y'all spending some or all of your Friday afternoon with us. We're here until 7 o'clock. We'll get back into the NFL and continue to preview the conference championship games coming up in about 12 minutes. Also, a special Longhorn football-related guest will join us during today's edition of the BK Lounge at about 6:30. I think you guys are going to want to stick around for that conversation. But this conversation that we have right now has to do with Bigfoot, gentlemen. You guys believers in Bigfoot? Are y'all fans of Bigfoot? KD, I'll send it your way first. What are your thoughts on this mythical ape-like creature?
I mean, it definitely doesn't get like JFK types or anywhere near that with me, where I've devoted way too many hours to just reading about it and learning about it and having fun with it. But I'm a little curious, but no, I don't believe in Bigfoot. I mean, I believe there's other lives out there. So we talk about, people say UFOs, earlier we're talking about aliens, because UFOs definitely exist. But I believe in that, so it's not like one of those, I don't think anything's out there. But I don't believe in Bigfoot. No, I don't.
Rod B?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's Bigfoot, but there's definitely unknown members of the animal kingdom that we have yet to classify or document. I don't know if Bigfoot would be that, because Bigfoot's really big, so people would have spotted him by now. But I'm not. Hey, there are really isolated parts of this world and this country where crazy things can go on, so I'm not going to put anything out of the realm of possibility.
That's true, but do you guys think Bigfoot is walking like we do? I mean, because I totally agree with Rod. There are obviously species, and there are some really remote spots where there could be some big-ass fish everywhere. I mean, they found
the ocean, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, they found a 500-year-old whale.
The Loch Ness Monster?
Not necessarily.
Haven't found him yet. We're working on it.
But and maybe that's just how we always think about it, right? Like, you always think Jesus has long hair. Maybe Jesus doesn't have long hair, right?
That's true.
But with Bigfoot, we always see him walking around just like a real big, tall dude who's hairy.
Yeah, they didn't have a lot of barber shops back then in JC's day, I don't think. But, yeah, I don't know. What else would Bigfoot do? Would he fly? Would he swim?
Well, he'd be on all fours. He'd be an animal. He wouldn't be walking like we do. So I'm with Rod on the species thing.
It would be more big feet then than Bigfoot, I all guess. Right. But then again, if he only had one foot, that'd be a crazy detail to this story. So how about this? I mean, obviously, Bigfoot, everybody knows about Bigfoot. He's captured the imagination. He or she, sorry for assuming gender, has captured the imagination of adventurers for decades. And he slash she slash it slash they slash them has now become the target of a state lawmaker in Oklahoma. This is the most Oklahoma story ever, guys. A Republican House member has introduced a bill that would create a Bigfoot hunting season. That's right. That's Representative great. Justin Humphrey, his district includes the heavily forested Washita Mountains in southeast Oklahoma, where a Bigfoot festival is held each year. So this is near the border between Oklahoma and Arkansas. So talk about the boondocks, man. I mean, my goodness. Apparently, they have a festival there every year, and he wants to issue a state hunting license and tag to help boost tourism and also keep people on the hunt for actual Bigfoot just in case he's really a thing.
Wow. So this started really, really dumb when you said an Oklahoma senator. But yeah, he's just drumming up tourism. I mean, it's still dumb, but he's drumming up tourism.
Yeah, here's the quote. Establishing an actual hunting season and issuing licenses for people who want to hunt Bigfoot will just draw more people to our already beautiful part of the state. End quote. I don't know if there's any beautiful part of that state. But, yeah, that's what he's looking for. And they want a bill to pass so people can come and actually hunt Bigfoot, or at least believe that they're hunting Bigfoot.
Katie's right. This is definitely about tourism, but this is also really dangerous because they're going to be shooting people who they think are just Bigfoots walking in the woods. It's like, oh, I thought he was a Bigfoot. Right. Shot him. So you notice, especially in the boondocks like Oklahoma and Arkansas, man, you know they're going to be doing some old crazy backwoods kind of stuff. So that's why I don't like it. I agree with Katie, though. Katie's right. It's definitely a tourism thing. But, yeah, have they spotted a lot of Bigfoot? Why is the Bigfoot Festival? Is it in Oklahoma?
Yeah, where's southeast Oklahoma.
Southeast. Okay. But hold on. Getting back to Rod's point there, though, that is something to think about, right? You're going through the woods. You see some 6'6 guy with his shirt off and his back, and his back is just full of hair like a sweater, and there's just hair everywhere, and he's toothless. You know, he may be from Oklahoma. Boom. That may be a human. Probably is.
Great point.
Yeah.
Yep.
There are Bigfoot festivals all over the world, gentlemen. I just did a quick Google search, and apparently there's a huge one in the United Kingdom every year. And they almost turn this into an ACL type thing where they have like concerts and movies and all sorts of shows and everything to like celebrate Bigfoot, or at least he's the theme for the whole festival. So
unlike
that's not
ACL,
just an Oklahoma
where you smell
thing.
The weed, you can smell the meth.
I guess you could smell the meth and you could smell Bigfoot's crap, I believe, too. I think you get a combination of both of those things. But yeah,
he proposed
this law, and if it gets passed into law, it would take effect on November 1st this year, which means that I guess starting around that time every single year, there would be a legal Bigfoot hunting season in the state of Oklahoma.
Wow. Here's an article from National Geographic, comes from like 3 years ago. It said, after centuries of effort, some 86% of the Earth's species have yet to be fully described, according to a new study that predicts our planet is home to 8.7 million species. They said that means scientists have cataloged less than 15% of species now alive on this planet.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And most of them are probably in the ocean. So, yeah, we don't really know. We think we know.
No, we don't know.
We don't know for sure. There could be some stuff out there we just have no idea about. Well, as Katie mentioned, they just found some prehistoric fish. They find stuff like that all the time. Different parts of the brain they didn't know existed. We are a lot more ignorant than we would like to believe.
Yes, and that goes for everything, not just this subject. In everything, we think we know more than we know. We don't know.
I only have one brain. I know that. There's one part to my brain.
We question that day to day.
No kidding. Well, I'm going up there, guys. I'll see y'all in November in southeast Oklahoma. I'm going to go hunt and see if I can find this
guy. Good luck
guy,
with that.
That'd be a pretty nice financial reward right there. You know, I missed out on the Powerball earlier this week, so Maybe if I find Bigfoot, I can make enough money to quit this job.
Take him into the
local. Oh, you will.
Yeah, right. Take him into the local place. You can maybe eat him.
Ooh.
Yeah. They can brine his nuts and calves and all that stuff.
I wouldn't start there, but to each his own. There's off the record, too. What a way to end it.
I'm not sure why I ended it that way.
I'm not either.
These nuts.
I am not either. It's the Triple Option with RVKD. Let's get back into sports. More conference championship previews in the National Football League. And we'll give our official picks for these games on Sunday. Will we have chalk, or do any of us predict an upset this weekend? We'll tell you next.